Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
The hydromorphine, it's applied drug. Their friends would go downtown Vancouver, pick up a bunch, and then just come right back to where I live, and they would just sell them to their friends. She had overdosed twice, once on fentanyl, and the ministry was involved. The most heartbreaking thing is when you're sitting in the hospital and they tell you they cannot help your child unless she verbally asks for help. And no teenage girl will ever ask a grown-up for help.
That was British Columbia Father Greg Sword on this program yesterday. And Mr. Sword's 14-year-old daughter died of a drug overdose. Hydromorphone. And Mr. Sword explained to us how his daughter, through her friends, was able to obtain the hydromorphone. And generally from individuals who participated in the Safer Supply program and the decriminalization of illicit drugs. And then they sell them to the kids, and the kids take them, and the individuals who got the drugs free through the Safer Supply program sell those or purchase other drugs, more powerful drugs that they purchase with the money that they get from folks they sell the safer drugs to. It's so convoluted that even when I explain it, it doesn't come out right. And it's because I find it's so disturbing. And I know there are folks who believe that this is really the way to go, that it was the right thing to do and it should continue. And the premier has said that even though he wants police engaged and involved as far as interdicting individuals who are using drugs in public spaces, but he does not want to end the Safer Supply experiment, which is set for 3 years. I have so much trouble with that, and there are people who truly believe in the program, but when I heard about it, my first thought was, this is not going to come out well. This is not going to turn out well. And you don't need any more than just the one dad, Greg Sword, and his story. But I do have another guest who's going to talk to us about this particular situation. She's a British Columbia businesswoman. She's been fighting against decriminalization of illicit drugs and the Safer Drugs program. She has faced discrimination from the provincial government. And when she walked her 10 and 12-year-old children, has been subjected to, we used to say, sort of half-jokingly, half the peace sign, only she's received it in duplicate from passers-by. Her business has been boycotted. Restaurant bar, and she writes to me, I see so many people muzzled to speak, and I see why businesses do not. This has been an awful experience. I would not wish it on anyone. My guest is Tanya Finley. In addition to being a business owner with more than 40 employees, she's an active volunteer with the Nelson British Columbia Chamber of Commerce and the Nelson Police Foundation. She's been a soccer coach for many years. Tanya, thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm well. When you heard Greg Sword talking about his daughter dying from an overdose, what does that viscerally do to you?
As a parent, it makes me want to cry. In our communities, we're seeing this exact same thing happening all across the province, and it is terrifying that our other vulnerable populations aren't being considered to be protected, like our seniors and our children.
And we've also talked about the chronic pain patients who are finding they cannot, in many cases, get the prescription medications any longer, which have provided them with some quality of life. And they find themselves in difficult situations where there's suicide ideation and some actually do commit suicide because the pain is intolerable. What have you done? When did this first start to seem wrong to you? And what are the steps you took?
Well, we started to notice it during COVID. Obviously, a lot of people were isolated at home It was a recipe for disaster, really. And what happened was Interior Health tried to put an inhalation site within 150 meters of a club's, a Scouts building and a senior center. And this is on the same street as our business where we operate, and there are many job providers along this block. And we were able to stop Interior Health because we were able to show photos of people dying on the steps. And we were able to determine that it was a very unsafe working environment for people working there. And eventually Interior Health did their investigations and had people come out and actually look at what happened to their building, because we're in the mountains and the person that are operating it are out of Kelowna and Cranbrooks, which are 3 to 4 hours away from where we are. So they weren't foreseeing what was happening in their own building and on the front steps. And then we have a shelter that's right beside it that has barriers that where people can't use drugs inside it. And we were seeing the exact opposite of what was happening in the shelter. And so we were able to unpeel this onion, and we started to just find that there were more and more people being affected wherever these inhalation sites, injection sites, safe supply, all of these things, which none of us agree with because it's clearly not working. More and more people are dying, and anything within a kilometer radius is dramatically affected. Their quality of life, they're now sleeping with bars and gates. The senior center that's right beside it, they have gates on it, and the senior was actually locked inside because the city had done their job to go and lock it. And the woman was locked inside her own place where she hands out coupons for the seniors. The smell of urine and feces and meth and benzos, whatever is on there, it is permeating in the concrete. It has to be showered down by city staff to clean out the smell so that we can engage in tourism trying to come into this little community. We see the towns there, and the government right now is trying to push them into all these little communities because they don't even understand what an inhalation site or an injection site is. So that's how N2 formed. It was just small little groups all over these communities, and they begging for help to say, please, someone stand in front of BC Housing, Interior Health, and our province to help protect our home, our children, our seniors, and our income and our families.
And you've been working not only in Nelson, your community, but also in other communities like Cranbrook and Creston.
And Trail, yeah.
And Trail. And you've paid a price for that.
Yeah.
What makes you so unpopular with some people for doing what you're doing?
I think the government doesn't like me to be in the room because I can call their bluff on this whole thing. We've been watching it and living it. They're going in and they're telling these communities, it's going to be okay. This is a good idea. This inhalation site is not going to affect you at all. We're going to have support staff for the people that need treatment and care, but it doesn't work. And we've lived it for 4 years now. And so when I go to these other communities, they can't lie to me. And so when I feel like I'm in an Aaron Brockovich movie where the government and BC Housing and the city staff are telling you, here, drink the water. Don't worry, this shelter, this inhalation site, this injection site, this body that's going to help people suffering with addictions is going to work and you're going to be just fine. And it's a lie. It's terrifying.
And nothing Mr. Sword told us yesterday surprised you, I gather.
No, not. And I'm very sorry for him and his loss.
Yeah.
The drug dealers are paroling the areas of these places. The crime is increasing. The vandalism, the personal attacks when you stand up. No one is responsible for their choices, the actions that they make. What we heard, and I believe is happening, is that the dealers are just saying, go and do this, break this law so you can get this money, because the addict isn't going to get any consequence. And there is nowhere to treat them. They have to beg for help, and they don't, because they just want the drug. That's all they can think of. They're not well. They're very unwell, and it's very sad. We have a man that was being kicked out of the shelter who had a septic leg, and he's being released onto the street, and he clearly is going to lose his leg and die. And if he won't go to the hospital, we can't help him.
You wrote to me, my business has been boycotted. My life has been consumed with standing up, and I can see why businesses don't. Mm-hmm. It's easier to just look the other way.
I don't think it's easier. I think they're afraid. This has become so divisive that they're afraid of the personal attacks. the vandalism, the assaults, the and because everyone says to me, why do you keep doing this? And it's because I've already done it. The bullets are already in the back. The knives are already there. The harassment's done. Like, it's kind of like you're a shell now walking through it. And you're just trying to move closer because you're just trying to protect everyone behind you going, I you don't need to do it. I can do it. And we have an army behind us. They just are afraid to speak up. Everything has been confidential. We have to have, they had to sign confidentiality agreements because we have pharmacists, we have doctors, we have people that can't speak because they're not allowed to.
You said,
so someone needs to be a voice.
Yeah, you sent me something that appeared on social media where you were attacked, and you're a former political candidate in BC, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Says former BC Liberal candidate Tanya Findlay has started a Kootenai-wide homeless hate campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Has anyone else noticed the neighborhood network moving into every community? It seems like a very inorganic movement to hate on homeless from a failed MLA candidate targeted towards the provincial government. It's rolling through town after town with the same pamphlets and propaganda. Somebody answered, yes, she's a hateful person, a Kootenai-wide boycott against your restaurant. Can I mention it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, Findlay's and Sage would be something I'd happily get behind. They really, people are, some people see you as being, what, in the way?
I think they think I don't care. They call me NIMBY. They call me all sorts of names that are, you know, totally untrue. They've never met me, so I'd love for them to have a conversation with us. The people on the streets are suffering and need dignified treatment.
Yeah.
And watching them have sex to get drugs and watching them laying on the ground dying, it's like a government-assisted slow suicide. And all of our communities are being swallowed up right now by this. They need to do something different.
Tanya, thank you. Thank you for getting in touch and thank you for sharing this information. I'm going to open my phone lines now and talk to some people about these programs and whether they believe that the safer drug programs are worth keeping in place or whether they need to be abandoned. I'll be back in touch with you. Thank you for today.
Thank you so much and keep going.
Yeah, I will. Tanya Findlay in British Columbia. So she's the bad person. Okay. 1-800-263-2428 is my number. 1-800-263-2428. It's not just in British Columbia that they have the Safer Drugs program. These programs exist in other provinces where we broadcast. They exist in Alberta. They exist in Saskatchewan. They exist in Manitoba, I think. I know they do exist in Ontario. So my question to you is this. Is the Safer Drugs program worth keeping in place, or must it be set aside and abandoned? Oregon, the state of Oregon, has done exactly that, and they are a very progressive, i.e. left-wing, state. 1-800-263-2428. Chris in Penticton, British Columbia. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Roy. You know, this is the first time I've actually been able to get through. I love your program.
Thank
and
you.
And I'm so thankful we have medication that's allowing you to still be out there and voicing the concerns we have as a society.
Thank you.
In Penticton, it's a travesty up here. I spend a lot of time working with the homeless. I'm retired, so I spend the time walking around, seeing if there's help needed or whatever. Just left the site about 20 minutes ago. His name is Lance, First Nation, and he's in a homeless group, and he probably will die within the next day or two because his leg is rotting away.
Oh, my Lord.
But he's so scared of going to the hospital because of how he's going to be treated. Now, we're so wrong-minded how we're trying to address this. We need support. We need a place for people to have the opportunity to get the treatment and help they require to get off these drugs. It's not going to work for a lot of people because if you're an addict, a lot of times it takes you to get to that low rung on the ladder before you say, I need help. But what we're doing right now is a travesty. All we're doing is killing them. And it just makes my heart hurt. It really does.
I can hear it.
Yeah.
And thank you for what you do.
I just do because it's necessary. Yeah. You have to have people out there that have a heart that can come alongside and try to uplift.
You know, it's too easy, and it happens quite regularly. Someone who's homeless and is lying on a sidewalk or is on a street corner. They're just somebody or something, unfortunately, that's in your way, and you just try to find your way around. And that's so fundamentally wrong. These are human beings, people, fellow citizens, and to take some time and show you care makes all the difference in the world. You do have to reach out.
Yeah, we have
to. But you're saying with the Safer Supply program, it's only making the situation worse.
Absolutely. I know of a couple, an elderly couple I was helping for a few years. Their son left this province because with drug issues. Then we got the Safe Supply and the decriminalization where you could have 2.5 grams. And I've seen their son. He came back to BC because that was available. And he's dead.
Oh, Lord.
And a friend of his is dead as well. And it's because of that supposed Safe Supply and decriminalization.
Tell me this. Are you noticing, or have you been told, we only have a little bit here of time, are you aware that the drugs are being sold, the drugs they receive?
Oh, they are. Yeah. They are. And it's starting to hit our one big high school here on Penticton. Yeah, it's happening. And it's scary because we're getting a whole realm of young kids now that are getting addicted, and they have no tools to get out of it.
Chris, thank you so much for your call.
No worries. Thank you.
Thanks for what you're doing. Chris in Penticton, British Columbia. We'll delve deeper into this.
If you want to hear more, subscribe to The Roy Green Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorites. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review and tell a friend. I'm Roy Green. Have a great weekend.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.